Empty Set Entertainment presents Slay, created by Scott Sigler and Rob Otto, performed by Scott Sigler. This story is intended for mature audiences only. Listener discretion is advised. Hello, junkies. This episode drops on Super Bowl Sunday, but I recorded it a couple of days before Sunday, so I don't know the results yet as I record this. The San Francisco 49ers face off against the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, as the author of the Galactic Football League series, of course, I will be watching. The Niners knocked my Detroit Lions out of contention 2 weeks ago with one of the best comebacks in NFL playoff history. My predictions for the game? I am going to go out on a limb here. I almost never make predictions. I'm going to do one now just for fun to see how it goes. Now, I think San Francisco's Brock Purdy had an exceptional second half against the Lions. He had three key plays he made with his feet. That means he scrambled, for those of you who don't know that. Without any of those three plays, I think the Niners might have lost the game or at least would have gone into overtime. The Lions weren't prepared for that level of scrambling ability and open field running, which Purdy hasn't shown a lot of before. I think the Chiefs' third-ranked defense is going to game plan for that. I think Purdy won't surprise them, and I think he is going to get hit a lot, which means the Chiefs may have an advantage. The Lions did not. And I think the Super Bowl experience of the Chiefs quarterback, the rest of the team, the coaching staff, I think that's going to win out. My prediction, and it is a bold one, is 31-17 Chiefs. Now, by the time you listen to this, I may already have egg on my face for this prediction, but that's why they play the games. All right, enough about football. Let's get back into Slay. Let me get you caught up on the story so far, and then we'll all enjoy Kelly Stroman's green thumb. Welcome to Slay episode number 46, titled Magic Carpet Ride. Let me get you caught up on the story, and then we're all going to check out Kelly Stroman's green thumb. Previously on Slay, Magda tried to teach Billy to control his innate powers, but the plan went awry as Billy's frustration turned to intense heat that set the old stone church's basement ablaze. To make matters worse, an enraged dragon burst through the basement door to protect Billy, which puts Magda in grave danger. Meanwhile, Lincoln tracked Teddy Two Fingers to Kelly Stroman's mansion, where Teddy is using a meshwork carpet to sneak through Droman's defenses in an apparent attempt to kidnap Droman's 13-year-old daughter, Delilah. Lincoln used crossbow bolts charged with green hellfire to blow a gap in the wall surrounding Droman's mansion, then drove his motorcycle straight for that hole. And now, episode 46 of Slay. Lincoln's between cloak trailed behind him, dying curls of green hellfire flickering on the flat gray leather. The mansion's grounds were bigger than they'd seen from the outside. Off to his left, a long patio leading out from the mansion's west side, a marble walkway stretching from it to a marble fountain straight ahead of him, complete with water-spitting cherubs lit up by angled ground lights. A row of lush, towering, 20-foot-tall arborvitae lined each side of the walkway. Shitbird's vision showed a magic carpet full of fuckheads landing on the mansion's roof. A wide-eared goblin in street clothes. A woman with cornrows wearing an apple-red kimono with voluminous sleeves that hid her hands. A second woman wearing a steel cuirass atop green camo fatigues. And a man with thinning, long white hair, dressed like an 80s rock star in black leather jacket and black leather pants, a long sword scabbard at his side. The white hair hadn't changed. It was him, finally. Teddy fucking Two Fingers. The carpet let them bypass Droman's automated meshwork defenses. Lincoln did not have that advantage. The tops of the conical arborvitae shimmered, morphed from manicured points into foliage hands big enough to wrap around Lincoln's chest. The bushy green stems bent down and the fingers stretched toward him. He banked his bike right, dodging a hand that smashed into the walkway so hard it cracked marble tiles. Lincoln's skid turned left and ducked to the side as another hand clenched the air above him. The hubless rear wheel squealed on marble, then shot bike and rider alike down the walkway toward the mansion. On both sides, anthropomorphic arborvitae bent and reached for him, some with foliage fingers outstretched, some balled into shrub fists the size of dumpsters. The evergreen automatons didn't know he was there to help and to gut Teddy like a fish, of course, but still to help. Too many trees, moving too fast. Lincoln hopped up, put both feet on the seat, and squatted low. "Sursum," he said, leaping high, aided by his between cloak pushing off the seat like a coiled gray spring. He soared skyward as arborvitae fists smashed down on the Verge TS, turning the beautiful electric bike from a sleek machine into a shower of shattered plastic and bent metal. Lincoln sailed through the air above the arborvitae that reached up for him, too slow and too late. His trailing cloak sursum spell added to his already powerful leap, combining with the bike's forward momentum to arc him up toward the mansion's third-story roof. Dragon's long body reared up like a giant snake about to strike. A telephone pole-thick python, orange firelight reflecting off a thousand ebony scales. Reptilian eyes darted from the flaming crucible to Magda to the blazing ceiling to Billy, still prone on the burning training mat. Magda held up her hands, fingers spread wide.
"Dragon baby," she said. "It ain't what it looks."
Dragon's tooth-filled mouth opened wide, wider than Magda would have thought possible, like that of a whale shark, so wide the lighter skin between her jaws stretched thin and translucent. Air rushed into the gaping maw, so fast Magda felt the fabric of her pajamas flapping and rattling around her arms and legs as if a high wind blew from behind. The flames on the ceiling, on the mat, rising up from the red-hot barrel, all stretched toward the mouth like shuddering orange tentacles, were pulled by the tsunami force winds. Dragon opened her mouth even wider. The fire poured in. She closed her mouth. All the fires were out. Only blackened wood, glowing metal, scorched mat, curling smoke, and a moaning Billy Middleton remained, his borrowed clothes scorched through in a dozen places. Dragon shimmered, then shrank back down to her dachshund form.
"Holy shit," Magda said. "I didn't know you could do that."
The dog belched. Black smoke curled up from her little mouth and little nostrils. Magda moved to help Billy. As he soared through the air, cloak trailing behind him, Lincoln drew his Vepr 12 shotgun and Tizona, his broadsword. He silently arced down toward where the flying carpet lay on the roof, next to a hole thickly ringed with what looked like sawdust. The goblin stood on the carpet, waiting there like a getaway car driver left with the motor running. He looked up the moment before Lincoln touched down, and he caught a 12-gauge slug in the face for his troubles. Perhaps the goblin had magic protection, perhaps not, and perhaps he had meshwork healing ability, but no meshwork could regenerate the brains that blew out the back of his skull to splatter on carpet, sawdust, and white roof alike. Lincoln hopped lightly as he touched down, skipping up just enough to drop through the strange hole in the roof. Neat and almost circular, wood beam sliced as if by a bandsaw. As his boots touched down on pink carpet, he twisted his shoulders in an oft-practiced move that spun his between cloak around him, obscuring his body's outline behind the spreading, tattered, flat gray leather. Utter chaos. A small, high-ceiling living room with Barbie pink walls and Pepto-pink furniture. In one corner, what looked like a gorilla made of ivy tendrils punched and pulled at a thick,
2-meter-long dark blue centipede wrapped around its neck. The gleaming centipede's huge, curved fangs snapped viciously, tearing free chunks of stem and leaf. Behind the vine golem, a terrified, blonde teenage girl wearing some kind of puffy pink pajamas. In the center of the room, the kimono woman floated in midair, with a fatigue-wearing woman standing on the floor next to and below her. In another corner, an exhausted man wearing a brown suit and wielding a short sword and small buckler shield struggled to defend himself against Teddy's strong, deft sword work. Bleeding cuts lined the man's suit and face. Lincoln recognized him. Finnicus Palmore, a bodyguard Lincoln had run into a couple of times back in his Rixitor days. Teddy's sword had a thick, intricate basket hilt that protected his fingers, or at least what was left of them.
"Hey, cocksucker," Lincoln said. "Been looking for you."
Teddy, his face lined by age and evil, saw Lincoln, and his expression shifted from delighted malice to infuriated resentment.
"You,"
he said, the single word a contemptuous curse. Teddy's distraction gave Palmore an opening. He lunged, thrusting at Teddy's chest. Teddy seemed to sense more than see the strike coming. He pivoted quickly. The blade sliced through black leather of the jacket's lapel, but missed flesh and bone entirely. Lincoln moved toward Teddy. The woman in the fatigues stepped to the side, blocking Lincoln's path. Long orange talons slid from her fingertips. The meshwork cuirass would protect her from his shotgun. He could see that at a glance. Lincoln slid the Vepr 12 back into the folds of his cloak. She took a step toward him, then hesitated. He saw recognition in her eyes. She knew who he was. This was normally the part where Lincoln would say something corny, like,
"You can drop your weapon and go, but if you try me, I will cut you down."
He liked to give people a chance to do the smart thing. Not because he didn't enjoy a duel to the death, which, he had to admit, a perverse part of him did, but rather because it made him feel better about himself when he ran that dumb fucker through. Normally, he would make that offer. But not today. Not for someone abducting a child.
"Droman is coming," the kimono-wearing woman called out. "I can sense his energy. We have to go, now!"
A swarm of yellow-black insects poured from her billowing right sleeve. The instant cloud swirled around the feet of the vine golem, still struggling with the huge centipede wrapped around its neck and chest. Bits of carpet and wood rose up from the cartoonish cloud. Teddy slashed at Finnicus, who parried but stumbled back from the blow.
"Sophie, take the Rixitor!" Teddy shouted. "Now!"
The woman in fatigues rushed forward, slashed at Lincoln with her long, wicked claws. Lincoln sidestepped right, easily dodging the strike, and in the same motion, he twisted, whipping Tizona out and up and in and down. The blade sliced through her left forearm, severing it. Sophie's momentum carried her stumbling forward as she stared at the spurting stump. She crashed into a couch, her blood gushing across the white-trimmed pink fabric. Lincoln turned to face Teddy, just as Teddy drove his broadsword through Palmore's sternum, all the way to the basket hilt. Teddy yanked the blade free as Palmore crumbled to the pink carpet.
"Nice hilt," Lincoln said. "Gotta guard those few fingers you have left, eh, fuckstick?"
Teddy needed to die. Die slowly. Die begging. Lincoln stepped forward. The floor beneath the vine golem gave out, dropping it down to crash hard on the floor below. Now nothing stood between Delilah and the kimono woman. The woman floated toward the girl, who raised two tiny, trembling fists.
"Grab that bitch!" Teddy shouted. "Let's get out of here!"
Lincoln took another step toward Teddy, but paused. The girl was so small, so scared. Kimono woman grabbed Delilah's wrist. Delilah screamed,
punched with a free hand, pulled at the voluminous silk sleeves of her attacker, all to no avail. Kimono woman floated up to the hole in the ceiling, pulling the girl up with her. Press Teddy. Kill Teddy, or stop the wizard woman from taking a child who had done nothing to no one. An innocent. Like Teddy had taken Sam. Lincoln ran at the woman, who soared up through the hole in the roof, dragging Delilah off the floor. Lincoln reached, snatched the girl's ankle, and yanked hard, pulling her free of the woman's grasp. As Delilah fell, Lincoln sensed the song of metal streaking at his face. He flinched away, bringing Tizona up in a weak, too hurried parry, enough to slow Teddy's slash, but not to stop it. Lincoln felt the lacing sting of meshwork-imbued steel kiss his cheekbone. Lincoln lashed out with a backhanded sweep, felt his blade dig through leather only to clang off unseen armor. He stepped back, making sure he was between the girl and Teddy, then started forward to attack, but before he took a step, two more giant centipedes streaked down to the hole with a sound like swamp boats racing across the Everglades. A pair of buzzing insectile wings flapped on each of the 100-plus segments on the centipede's bodies. Lincoln stepped back again, put a hand behind him to make sure he knew where Delilah was. In that moment of hesitation, one centipede wrapped around Teddy, the other coiled around Sophie. Lincoln rushed forward, but he was too late. Wings roaring, the centipedes and their cargo shot up and out of the hole. He bent to leap through the roof to give chase, small arms cinched tight around his waist in a desperate hug.
Don't leave me!
With his free hand, he grabbed Delilah's wrist, squeezed hard, and yanked it away from himself all in the same motion, then sprang up through the hole. Even before his feet set down on the roof, he saw the covert carpet whipping away into the night sky, the woman in the red kimono in front, Teddy Two Fingers on the back end, flipping Lincoln, the bird. Lincoln reached for his crossbow. The carpet and riders alike vanished from sight.
Shitbird! Follow my gaze! Track him!
Hey, this is Scott, the author of this story. This episode is sponsored by Regal Unlimited, which is all about movies. I love movies, and you can see that in my work, from the references to films to the movie quotes I embed in my dialogue and the summer blockbustery big action sequences that close out each novel. If you like going to the theater like I do, because that's where movies are meant to be enjoyed, Regal Unlimited makes perfect sense. Regal Unlimited is the all-you-can-watch movie subscription that pays for itself in just two visits. See any standard 2D movie anytime with no blackout dates or restrictions. When you want to watch a movie in a premium format like 4DX, IMAX, RPX, or ScreenX, your Regal Unlimited membership gets you into those premium experiences at a reduced cost. And don't forget the snacks, man! With Regal Unlimited, you get 10% off all non-alcoholic concession items. So if you're planning to see two or more movies this month, you need to join. Remember, Regal Unlimited is the all-you-can-watch movie subscription that pays for itself in just two visits. Sign up now in the Regal app or at regmovies.com/unlimited. That's regmovies.com/unlimited. Use the code SIGLER024 and earn 10% off a three-month subscription. That's SIGLER024 to earn 10% off a three-month subscription.
In the climate-ravaged world of 2072, the city of Piura stands as a miraculous green haven. Piura is a geoengineered paradise that protects its fortunate residents from the global catastrophes of heat domes, fires, floods, and droughts. In a time when the world outside is unsafe, it's vital for Piura's existence that people rally behind the purpose of the city, and Demetria Lopez, head of the city's public relations, tirelessly promotes its idyllic image. But when she stumbles on a dark secret that, if exposed, would be the downfall of Piura's existence, she must decide who and what she's willing to protect. From Wondery, the makers of Academy and Dr. Death, The Last City stars actors Ray Seahorn, Jeannie Tirado, and Maury Sterling. Follow The Last City on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of The Last City early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Thank you.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Lincoln focused, stared at the spot in the night sky where Teddy had vanished, willing himself to see the carpet. Out of the corner of his eye, he caught a glimpse of flapping black as Shitbird streaked toward the area. If the crow could find the carpet, follow it, then a girl's scream from below, one worthy of a horror movie. Hating himself for doing so, Lincoln tore his eyes away from Teddy's escape and looked down through the hole. The iridescent blue centipede that had been fighting the golem scurried toward Delilah, who was on her butt, scrambling backward across the bloody pink carpet, her left hand at her chest. Her back hit the wall. Hundreds of sickly, trembling legs pushed the long beast toward her. The black fangs opened wide. Lincoln dropped through the hole and slashed down as he landed. Tizona split the centipede in two from the head halfway down the body. Black fluid sprayed out from greenish flesh.
You fucking piece of shit!
Lincoln had looked away before Shitbird could spot the rug, which meant Teddy had gotten away clean.
Motherfucker!
Lincoln slashed down again, splitting the beast like a blue-shelled lobster, almost all the way to the tail.
I could have had him!
He kicked at the mutilated centipede, sent it flying against the wall in a splash of black goo.
I will cut you into 1,000 fucking pieces!
He stepped toward the nasty mess, drawing Bastard Maker as he did so he could chop the cocksucker into 1,000 bits so he could puree it, so he could...
Mister, are you okay?
That voice, laced with fear, with pain, stopped Lincoln in his tracks. He turned. Delilah was still on her butt in the corner, her right hand holding her left protectively against her sternum. Black centipede goo streaked her pink pajamas, which Lincoln now saw weren't pajamas at all, but rather a fuzzy pink onesie.
Am I okay?
Lincoln glanced back toward the mangled mess of still-twitching centipede, its blood dripping down the pink wall in black streaks, spreading across the pink carpet. He had completely lost his shit there for a minute. His head still bubbled with hate, with rage, with frustration. He looked back at the girl.
Never been better. Thanks for asking. What happened to your wrist?
She winced.
I think it's broken from when you grabbed it.
A wash of hot shame coursed through Lincoln. Had he grabbed the girl that hard? He didn't remember.
That lady in the red kimono grabbed you too, he said. Maybe it was her.
It was you.
Delilah winced with pain.
But let's make that our secret. Daddy won't like it if he knows you broke my arm. You're Lincoln Franks, right?
Lincoln felt lower than he had in a long time. Had he hurt that girl? And now she wanted to cover for him?
Yeah, he said. Delilah Drummond, I presume?
She let go of the left hand long enough to wipe black goo from her pale face, but only managed to smear it around.
That's me, she said. There's some band-aids in my bathroom.
Band-aids? You cut?
No, you are, Delilah said. Your cheek.
Lincoln put his right gauntlet under his left armpit, pinched down to pull his hand free. He touched his cheek, first felt blood, then the deep sting of flesh sliced down to bone. Band-aids weren't going to cut it. He needed Magda.
Mr. Palmore, Delilah said. Is he dead?
Lincoln looked to the brown-suited body lying face up on the blood-spattered pink carpet. Palmore's lifeless eyes stared out. Lincoln walked to him. The wet, wide blood stain on Palmore's white shirt at his sternum told the story, but Lincoln checked the man's pulse anyway.
Yeah, Lincoln said. He's dead.
Delilah sniffed.
Dead? Because of me?
She felt bad. That wouldn't bring Finnegas back, but it was something.
He died protecting you, Lincoln said, not because of you.
She sniffed again. For what this girl had just endured, was still enduring, she kept her composure. Delilah Drummond was one tough cookie.
If you hadn't shown up, they would have taken me, she said. Thank you, Mr. Franks.
That, too, was something. Her gratitude didn't dilute Lincoln's anger and frustration, but it didn't exacerbate it either. Delilah glanced upward as if listening for something. The floor started to vibrate. Then the whole room did the same, and Lincoln knew the entire mansion was shaking from the wake of a massively powerful meshworker.
Daddy's home, Delilah said. Can you help me up, Mr. Franks? It might be better if he sees me before he sees you. Daddy can misunderstand things sometimes.
Man, Billy said. Ariella was super pissed off about the basement damage. You sure we should be using her office like this?
He was sitting in Ariella's chair at Ariella's desk because that is where Magda had told him to sit. Mags had insisted because there were no other chairs in the Old Stone Church, and also, probably, because doing so would piss off Ariella even further.
If she didn't want us to use her office, Magda said, she should have told us not to use it before she raced off to Drummond's after Link called her.
Magda's weird doctor bag sat open on Ariella's desk. Magda held a mason jar half full of a stinking, sickly green liquid. She dipped a pair of chopsticks into the jar, came out with a glistening, purple-brown thing that sort of resembled a Hershey's Kiss if Hershey's Kisses were made from rotted internal organs. Billy looked away.
Man, how many more of those things you could have put on me?
Till you run out of burn blisters, Magda said. Or I run out of fusculas.
Fusculas. Magda had weird-ass names for all the weird-ass things in her weird-ass doctor bag. She placed the dollop of nasty flesh on one of Billy's burns. He hissed in pain, but on that spot, the pain faded quickly, almost instantly, just as it had the other dozen or so times she had put one on him.
And I thought the worms were gross, Billy said. I'm a vomit if I have to look at these things.
Then don't look at them.
Magda dipped the chopsticks into the jar again.
I clean up wounds, not barf.
She placed another fusculus on another oozing blister. Burns hurt, but Billy sighed with the relief brought on by the quivering dollop of flesh. He had to admit that Magda's medicine, if that's what this could be called, worked well.
Hey, Mags, did you know Dragon could do that?
You mean eat fire? I did not. That little thing is full of surprises.
As if on cue, the sleek, long-haired black dachshund pranced into the office, a tattered, stuffed giraffe in her mouth.
There's my pal, Billy said. Saved me from myself like Darth Vader and Magma. Who's a good girl? Who's a good girl?
Dragon reveled in the praise, circling madly while shaking the giraffe back and forth. Magda picked up the mason jar lid, screwed it on, put the jar back in her doctor's bag.
You're all set, Lil B, she said. Give it a few minutes, then go ahead and borrow more of Lincoln's clothes. He won't mind.
Billy looked at the clothes he was wearing. Burn holes in the black and gray flannel, more on the jeans, and his boot soles had melted into misshapen, Bigfoot-style prints. Magda set the slime-coated chopsticks on Ariel's immaculate desktop. Droplets of the smelly fluid spread across polished wood.
A little gift for Ariella, Magda said. She should be at Droma's by now. See, Lil B? Didn't I tell you Link would get us out of debt? Ariella may be a bitch, but she'll get that deal with Droma done. I lay odds you'll have real training in no time flat.
Billy hoped so. If he wanted to learn how to use a staff to beat the living shit out of someone, he would go to Magda. As far as training magic went, though, Magda clearly knew fuck all. Worse than fuck all. She'd almost burned the whole church down. Correction. She'd almost made Billy burn the whole church down. Maybe Grandma had been right to hide those powers away.
I'm going to go out back and play fetch with Dragon, he said, after I get some clothes. You sure Lincoln won't mind?
Magda laughed, reached into the doctor's bag, and came out with a pint of Red Star vodka.
Lil B, I'll wager a guess that right now, clothes are the last thing Lincoln is worried about.
You have been listening to Slay, created by Scott Sigler and Rob Otto. Performed by Scott Sigler. Copyright 2024, Empty Set Entertainment. For more info on Scott Sigler, his novels, short stories, and podcasts, visit scottsigler.com. Theme music is the song They're Watching Me by the band Super Weapon.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.